As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
So you got in touch with me, we were talking before we began officially recording, a number of years ago, and you called an initial sighting that you had, probably not your first encounter from what I'm reading from your emails, but we started talking years and years ago, and you called this encounter in for episode 100, and that was entitled Frayed Lines. And as we were saying, that was 5 years ago, which is amazing. But you are here to not only recap that story, because you did admit that you didn't even go into all the detail of that. But today, one of the other stories and encounters you're going to cover is a continuation of that that actually happened a year later. So I don't know if you wanted to start with the stuff from when you were even younger. You mentioned some ghostly encounters and such, and what order you wanted to go in. But wherever you want to start first, that is up to you.
When I was young, I definitely had like some demonic encounters, and they're actually, I've found a lot of mirrors of this in like the literature, and so I don't really want to go into that too much. I think it is a part of it, though. I don't know exactly why or how it fits in, but it does feel like it's a part of it. But I do think I'll just go ahead and start with the post UFO sighting, because before that I really wasn't interested in UFOs at all, or aliens, or any of that type of stuff. My dad did tell me about a UFO encounter sighting that he had as a teenager. So if you want, I can tell you that, which might even fit in because it's oddly related to my adult life with my wife.
Yeah, but, please do.
Yeah, so when my dad was a teenager, he lived in a little town, well, just outside of a little town named Alamosa in southern Colorado. So there was like long stretches of highway where there's nothing. And as a teenager, he was coming back from his girlfriend's house, and he had like a 20-mile drive down a straight road, and he said it was about midnight. He saw a car with really bright headlights behind him coming at a high rate of speed, and he thought it was like a truck speeding or something. So it just crept up on him, but as it got behind him, it actually went over his car. This is in the 50s. And he said that he could see shadows on the ground from it being above his car and stuff like that. He said he didn't remember it leaving. Which is kind of a mirror of my experience. But so that was pretty much a story that my dad had always told me when I was younger, that he had. That's pretty much that.
Well, that's very Close Encounters of the Third Kind, right?
Right, yeah. He said it was over the car and it like threw him off. And then the next thing you know, he said he was just driving into town.
So,
but I don't remember.
Sorry, yeah. So, I mean, the fact that you see something happen that is so very odd and then you don't remember it leaving, that's kind of a red flag, right? Like, how could you not? Unless you had some kind of missing time, right?
And then as you're going to hear about my next story, it's a very similar thing. And that, I think I did leave in this detail when I called in 5 years ago on the trade line. But so I'll just go ahead and go into that. So I was about 23 at the time. It was about 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago. And I was on my way back into school. I went to school at CU Boulder, that's in Colorado. And I had been working in the East Coast all summer construction. And I just like got off like the last 3 weeks of August and I got home. And I was in Boulder and I was staying with a friend of mine. And I happened to run into another friend who had like a cabin that his grandfather had built at the turn of the century up in Nederland, which is just above Boulder, west, like maybe 6 miles into the mountain, right deep in the mountains. It's right by like a small ski resort. So he's like, hey, do you want to come up and stay at my cabin with me for the last few weeks? And the national cabin was like, yeah, that sounds awesome. So, you know, I was kind of mobile at the point waiting for my apartment to get ready in September. I went up there and it was awesome. We had a great time. Like all 3 weeks, we just camped, fished, like lived the rustic life. I mean, it was really awesome. Like thinking back, it was a really, really fun time. We were kind of, I think we were in our third week, like the middle of our third week. And it was a typical normal day. We had went fishing that day. We made fish for dinner. We cooked and we would usually sit out on the porch and play cards. And I mean, we weren't big into like any kind of like, you know, drinking or anything like that. I think we might've been drinking a beer. You know, we were pretty just normal. We were not straight edge or anything. I mean, we might've smoked a little weed now and then, but we weren't high or anything that night. We were sitting on the porch. We had just finished dinner and it was like not that late. It was probably like 9 or 9:30 and we were playing cards on the porch. We had like a little table and some little chairs on the porch and it overlooked a lake and a big Eldora mountain, which is right in front of this cabin. And I mean, it's just gorgeous sight. All of a sudden out of nowhere, I mean, I swear it seemed like it was within 5 minutes, the whole valley filled up with fog. I mean, thick fog. Like, I was like, what is this? Like, we were in the thickest fog possible. Like, I mean, you could barely see 15, 20 feet in front of you. It was really crazy how much fog there was. So, and it wasn't like raining or anything. It was just foggy. So that was really weird. And then out of the fog, next thing you know, we could see a bright light at the top of the mountain. And we both looked at it and we said, what is that? You know, is that somebody up there? You know, at first we couldn't discern if it was a fire car or what, because it was so high up. But as it started to come down the mountain, and I mean, you can't see it clearly because, like I said, there was so much fog. All you could see was like the perception of the light, a bright light far away up on the mountain. And as it approached, I mean, it was so diffuse. It was just like a light coming through the fog. But within about 5 minutes, I kid you not, I started to see animals flying the opposite direction. Birds. And I mean, this is at 9, 10 o'clock at night. Birds, I saw rabbits, I saw squirrels, chipmunks, things all running in the opposite direction. As we both were like, what is this, you know? So we both got up, walked off the porch and stood in front of the porch onto this clearing that was right above the driveway that led up to the cabin. And it was kind of like a little shelf that you can kind of look over. And as we looked over, it pierced the fog and it was a disc. It was a clear silver disc, probably 100 feet above the ground, maybe 200 feet above the ground, right above the treetops. And it was just spinning there and it was pulsing. It had like a deep sub-level hum that you could feel in your chest. But it wasn't like loud or anything. It was just like a, like when you feel bass, but it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. It was just like pulsing. And like I said, all these animals were still fleeing. I didn't even know there was that many animals in that shrubbery. Like it threw me off how much animals were flying past. But it basically just pulsed there and it was floating. And I was scared beyond, I couldn't even talk. I was like, what's going on? Although my friend who I was with, he wasn't scared. He like walked forward, tried to look at it more. And it was weird because all of a sudden we were just standing in front of the cabin. It was like, it was all happening at once. And then there was nothing. It was gone. We don't remember it leaving. We don't remember anything about it, except like leaving the way it was. Just, it was right in front of us. Just both about, I would say maybe a minute. And then the odd thing to me about this is that we just basically like went to bed. We didn't even talk about it. And I hear that's pretty common, you know, among people that have up close sightings, but it threw me off really bad. And I thought about it ever since then, that we didn't get a chance, you know, we didn't see it leave. So obviously it seems like there might be some missing time there. And the next morning when we woke up, my friend, I'll just call him R, he basically just wanted to leave. He didn't want to talk too much. He just started packing his bags and he wanted to go back to Boulder. On the way down, while we were driving down the mountain, I actually said to him, I was like, hey, are you saw what I saw last night, right? There was a UFO right in front of the cabin. And he said, yeah, I saw that. And that was about the most I could get from him. He really didn't want to say too much more than that. And that's pretty much that. You know, that was a pretty heavy duty experience. I mean, I remember going down and writing it in my diary and thought about it. And after that, I became interested in UFOs. I became interested in the whole phenomena, so to speak.
Yeah, I could definitely see why. Absolutely. Were you going to add some stuff there before I ask some questions?
No, go ahead and ask some questions. That's what I was going to say, because it leads to something that happened a year later that I think. But yeah, apart from that, that was pretty much that situation. I mean, it was very odd. And there was a situation about 3 weeks before that I'll just throw in here. Not right. It was about the first week we were at the cabin. We did have a Bigfoot. It wasn't like I saw Bigfoot, but it was trying to get in the cabin. R told me that happened before to his uncle and his mom, but it was like 20 years before that. I know it wasn't a bear because it was like walking around on top of the cabin and walked. It was on the cabin and walked on. And it wasn't a person because it was really big. It went by the window. I didn't see any details or anything like that, but it was so dark outside. But it was a pretty scary night. I'll just throw that in there. That was actually before that UFO.
How tall would it have to have been, just estimated, as far as, I know it's a shadow outside of a window, but if you know how tall the windows are, how much of the window did it take up?
I thought 7 or 8 feet easily, wow. Because it was kind of, the head was over the top of the window. And it was just like a shadow that went really fast. And I said, what, see that? And he said, yeah. He goes, just stay in the kitchen and be quiet. And we just, and it kind of like opened the door a couple times. A couple of the windows had shutters still on them. And one of them, the one that didn't have the shutters where I run past, it was dark outside too. I think it was Bigfoot just because of the way it moved. Bears don't move like, you know, it moves like not a person, but like something that stands up.
And that would have to be a really big bear to be able to block the window like that on two legs, right?
Yeah. And then it's just the way that it was persistent on the doors. And I didn't hear growling, never heard scratching, because you'd hear scratching from nails. You know, if it was a bear, they wouldn't be able to grab the handle like that and pull on it a couple times, you know?
And how much detail do you know about what happened, you know, with his mom there all those years ago in this possible Bigfoot situation? What do you know about that?
He said they had a sighting, I think, up on the mountain. It's right. There's like a mountain that overlooks Nederland that the cabin's on, and then the mountain on the other side of that. And then behind that, it's nothing. I mean, it is like, if you look at it on a Google map, it is so vast, the wilderness. There's no highway or nothing. That's why it would like surprise us when we saw the light on the mountain. We assumed it was a Jeep or something, but obviously it wasn't. It flew over the lake and came over through the fog onto the trees. The fog really threw me off, though. It came in like so fast.
You know, one of our authors for Beyond the Fray Publishing, W.T. Watson, wrote an entire book that has to do with fog and the paranormal and how it's a precursor, or it happens at the same time or it happens after. So just going to throw that in there as well.
I've heard that a couple times. That's why I was like, that happened to me.
So the going back to the Bigfoot thing just for a moment. During this 3 weeks, at the end of it, you had this UFO sighting. So that's what got you into UFOs. And so this question may be immediately null and void. But do you remember anything else weird around the cabin that when you look back, you're like, oh, maybe Bigfoot did this, or, you know, anything else weird tied to Bigfoot?
I don't, but you know, now knowing what I know, because I've listened to all these podcasts, I know about like the stuff they do. I probably would have seen stuff, but I didn't look for anything like that. So no, I don't remember.
Yeah, that's okay. Any of those beats. I was just wondering.
But that night, I was terrified. I'll tell you that. It was a very harrowing 3 hours that it was over. It was pretty weird. Yeah. It kind of meshes a little with the UFO, and then people are like, okay, but I mean, you know, if I would just probably say that it was something paranormal. I don't think it was an animal. You know, my mind now that I've listened to all these podcasts, it goes Bigfoot. But back then, I don't know if I thought that exactly. I thought it might have been. I didn't know. I was scared. I did think I remember he told me the story, and I was like, oh, okay. I never heard too much Bigfoot stuff in my life. My dad told me one, two things about it in the San Luis Valley, but I've never really, like I said, I wasn't really, really interested in stuff like, I was kind of I went to CU Boulder, so I was like a frat dude, I partied, you know, stuff. I was really kind of like lame in that way.
No, okay, so your friend R, this event is going on, and he doesn't seem scared at all. You asked him, and he's like, no, it's fine. But then the next day, he wants to leave immediately, and doesn't seem to want to talk very much. Were you guys slated and scheduled to leave that next morning, or was that an unscheduled departure?
It was unscheduled. We were actually scheduled to leave that the end of that weekend, which would have been like 3 or 4 days later. So
it sounds like it bothered him more than he let on.
Oh, yeah, he was bothered by it. And then I actually ended up connecting with that guy several times later. He moved to Northern California. And in fact, where my next story picks up, that's where I was at, but I wasn't with him, but I was where he was when the next thing happened to me. But yeah, he did not want to talk about it. And even after the year later, when I tried to talk to him about it, he'd only do it very vaguely. You know, he didn't like to discuss it or even ponder it. Cause I was, you know, for me, I'm super curious about it, but he didn't really want to talk about it.
And just to be clear, were you guys playing cards on it was the back porch that overlooked the lake, and then you ended up in the front of the house at the end of this sighting? Was I right about hearing that?
No, actually, that's the front porch. And,
oh, okay.
The front porch, like you open the front door and you're looking at a lake.
Oh, nice. Okay. I'm sure that view was stunning, by the way. Okay, so.
You're above it. You're like a good couple feet above it.
But the fact that, just like in your dad's sighting, you do not remember it leaving. And especially since you have admitted, and thank you for saying this, that it was stunningly terrifying, especially since you felt that way in that moment, the fact that you don't remember this thing leaving, you can't say it zipped off straight up into the air or just poof disappeared, is extremely strange.
No, and guess what else is strange? There was no fog when we came to. Or when we walked in the cabin.
No, there was no fog anywhere. And there was a ton of it before.
It was just fog everywhere. So those are two weird things that, and you know, people that I have told this to, like I told this on one podcast before. I don't remember looking at the time. I honestly, we just went in the cabin and was like sleep. We just like crawled in our beds, sleeping bags, and just passed. It was weird how I remember passing out pretty easily too.
Do you remember the next day that there were animals back around the area?
Yeah, I think they all came back, but them flying away, I've only heard that in a couple of stories. I think Pascagoula, if you ever heard of that story, there was some like animals flying or animal interaction. Maybe I'm getting like some other one, but I totally dived into this. I mean, the 5-10 years after this, especially after my neck experience, I pretty much read all of the classic books, you know, all the Bud Hawkins books, every one of them. I read them front and back because I just wanted to get to the bottom of this. You know, I'll be frank with you, before all this happened and before the next thing happened, I was kind of not a skeptic, but I was such a straight edge person. I was kind of an atheist too. So it really opened me up.
And I know we have the next one to talk about, and this may or may not answer some of my questions, but, and I know that you're not going to get too much into this. I don't blame you, and I have no problem with this, but even just recently, I talked to a woman named Heather for 348. That was only two episodes ago by the time this next week airs. who also had a UFO sighting, but then, and it can go either way, it can be chicken or egg and vice versa with this stuff. She saw the UFOs, she had a couple different sightings, and then over the years, even right now, it's still going on, she has essentially poltergeist slash ghostly activity in her home that's actually been captured on video, which I'm not a big fan of videos or EVPs a lot of the time, but this particular video she sent me was stunning. So, and again, I'm not trying to go fishing or make you talk about anything. I'm just saying for your sake, there's a lot of folks out there that have these UFO encounters and sightings. Sometimes they run in families, obviously. And then they can also either prior to or post sighting have essentially poltergeist activity or ghostly activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after I've had both, not poltergeist so per se, but I've had like a lot of ghostly activity. In fact, and then I mean, if you want me to tell you, I'll go into it after my, you know, where the continuation of the
Yeah, whatever you feel comfortable with, Alex. Absolutely. Yeah, you can go right ahead. I think I'm done with the questions for now with the first story, unless something pops into my head. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. No. But I have. Yeah, I've had definitely a lot of paranormal. Not like I would say that I'm like haunted or anything, but I've definitely experienced some things. But I think I keep a lot of the stupid stuff at bay. Sorry to say, like the darker things, because of what happened to me in my second experience. It kind of opened up a spiritual thing inside of me where I've kind of studied so much into my spirit, and I've kind of gone so far down into it that I kind of have an armor up against all that stuff now. So I did experience, and I've had demonic stuff ever since I was little, and I can go into that later if you want, really deeply heavy duty demonic stuff. But I think I got it all under control now, and I know how to protect my family. I know how to protect myself. So I think that's kind of keeping it all at bay, to be honest. But whenever I lax up on it, it does ramp up. Like things ramp up, you know, like missing things, doors being open, you know, stuff like that. I don't really have like the heavy duty haunting stuff. So I had actually went up to get a job with this friend of mine who had just bought, and not R, but R was living up there too. He was living in the same area. It's Humboldt County, and like right on the border of Oregon, kind of Northern California. Right in the Redwoods. It was really beautiful. Actually, I was living right outside of Arcata, which is like a college town. So I had moved up there. I'd probably been up there a month, and I was like working at this pizza place. I just graduated college. I'd been out of college a year. So it was like a year later, because I was a senior at the time that this thing happened, the one in Colorado. So I was up there, and now this experience, now I'm going to tell you, I've only found a couple of mirrors of it because it was so heavy duty. I found a lot of correlations in a lot of other people's stories after, but the actual way that it happened was very interesting. So I basically love camping. I had a dog, I had a truck, and I would stay at this like campground all the time. Even though I had a place to live, I would go down to this campground and stay like two nights all the time because it was just right on the ocean. It was really beautiful. It was called Patrick Point. It's a park right on the ocean. I mean, if you ever look it up, I think it's called Agate Beach. Agate Beach, Mega Beach. It's so beautiful there. I mean, if you look up pictures, it's just like stunning. It's like redwoods meet the ocean. And I mean, it's amazing. So anyway, I had made a habit of camping there, you know, every week or every other week. And I'd been up there like not that long. So my dog and I went up there, and this was like my third time camping in the same camping place. So I actually knew the ranger who ran the park. He was about a little older than me. He was like 2 years older than me. So we would just hang out and talk a lot. My dog would actually hang out with his dog because he had a dog in this little like cabin thing that they had for him. So my dog was there, and I said, hey, I'm going to go take a hike by myself. And I went and hiked down off Agate Beach. There's these little cliffs that you can go on and then walk around the shore. There's these really big rocks that jut out into the ocean. They're just like huge. And it's cool because if you get on the rock, it like vibrates. Like you can feel the waves underneath it vibrate. It's really cool feeling. So I had hiked down to those rocks, and I was like just laying there looking up at the sky. And this is probably, I don't know, 2 p.m., 1 p.m. in the afternoon. The sunny cloud, light clouds, sunny day, probably 75 degrees, you know, perfect. Everything was perfect. I was looking up in the sky, and the clouds were kind of like forming around a large structure that looked cloaked in the sky. and I couldn't believe my eyes, like wiping my eyes. And I looked at it closer. And then as I looked at it, it was no doubt. There was a huge, and it, it was not teardrop, but more like a gigantic eye, you know, like where it's pointy at one end and pointy at the other end, and then it bows out really big on the inside. But it was probably, I don't know, miles long. It was gigantic. It was
bigger than you broke up there. How long was it?
I'd say probably a couple miles.
Wow. Long.
Just because of the size of it, it was so big. It was mammoth. And that's why it threw me off, because I couldn't believe what I was looking at. It seemed as it started to, the shape of it started to be defined by the clouds, it seemed like I felt it noticed me. And then out of nowhere, it looked like just like a red laser came out of this thing through the clouds to my chest. It basically hit me right in the center of my chest, and I immediately could not breathe. It was like sucking the air out of me. So each breath that I took got shorter and shorter, like before. And then I could not take any more breaths, and I thought I was going to die. The weirdest part is that at the point of like me not being able to breathe anymore, I was taken out of my body. That's the only way I can explain it. And I've heard of this a lot. You know, people half or more of the abductions are done this way, actually, where they take like your astral body or something. But anyway, I was sucked out of my body, and I can remember the sound of it. It sounded like cellophane in a vacuum. Like it was just this loud sound, and I was basically pulled from my body. And I don't know if I was aboard the ship, but I think I was. There was a ship I was aboard, and I remember not only coming to and looking and seeing clear, but I was seeing in like a different type of vision than we have. It was like clearer than our vision. And I know I've heard this before, but it's like the clearest HD you could possibly imagine. And I know that's hard to imagine, but it's like, it was like so clear the way that I could see. And I remember being surprised that I didn't have a body as well. And I was also a little shocked, but a voice just kept soothing me and just kept saying, "Don't worry, you're fine. You're okay. You're okay. Okay." I immediately became, you know, pretty calm. Basically, I had this experience where I don't know what type of an entity it was. It didn't really show me. I didn't see a physical entity. I saw it. It basically, there was a ship. I had a lot of experiences on the ship. Like I went down a hallway. I couldn't go down the hallway. I was like, how do I move? And the voice was like, just look that way and you'll go that way. So I like just did that, and I looked, and I wanted to go that way, and I just started moving that way. So it was weird, like felt like these floating eyeballs or something. Yeah, I had a lot of experiences. Like they showed me, there was this room, and I've heard this in another abduction experience. There was a giant room that was like a hologram with planets in it. Okay, and you can walk into this room and you're amongst planets. Okay, and then as you look at a planet, you actually start to like zoom into it. So like if I looked at a planet that looked like Earth, and I think it might have been Earth, I don't know what it was, but it looked like a, you know, a blue terrestrial type planet. I looked into it and I started going through the clouds. And as I started going through the clouds, I saw a terrain, and then I saw animals like on plane running, stuff like that. See water rushing through rivers. And then as you just like pull back, you're just back in that room. It was pretty cool. The main part of this whole experience was they gave me a huge lesson on grays. Now, I've never, even after I saw the, you know, I've heard of Whitley Strieber and communion and all this stuff, I'd never paid attention to it. I mean, I was like, oh, that's an alien, you know. Even after I saw this flying saucer in Colorado the year before, I never thought of a gray. I never thought of that was what was in there or anything. In fact, if I thought about it, I was like, that could have been I didn't really know. I wasn't completely like immediately thinking alien. So basically they gave me a whole lesson on grays. They told me that there's different types of them, that they're not all the same. They're from different parts of the universe. Some of them are from from Earth. They've actually been here for a long, long, long time, or from the solar system. They've evolved underground because they destroyed their planet. They no longer have the ability to reproduce. They need us for reproduction purposes. We've been sold out by our government to do that in exchange for technology. They told me this aboard the ship. I mean, this is stuff obviously I've heard later after discovering, you know, the literature and all that, but I didn't read any of this before then. So they showed me a lot of like underground bases in the US manned by them. Basically they live around here. You know, this is a part of their self, this is part of their home too. That's why they can do this, they're doing to us. They showed me that some of them are not fully biological, that they're half robot, half human, half, you know, by they have like both components, are more like drones. That the other grays that are wrinkly and a little bit taller, they actually run them from the ship above the aft. So they send these grays down to do a lot of their work for them. They showed me their planet. They showed me what grays looked like before. They were very similar to humans, but they became really corrupted. Their planet, basically, they showed me what their planet looked like when they had to go underground. The planet looked a lot like Earth, but by the time they had to go underground, the sky was red, and it was just like smoke everywhere. It was crazy looking. They showed me a lot of the Earth, you know, kind of like what's going on here. I asked them about like why children have to die, why there's demons. I remember we basically had this whole long situation go on. It felt like an eternity. And by the time I had to leave, they were like, okay, it's time now. You got to go. And I don't know exactly why, but I didn't want to go. I did not want to leave. I felt so much love. Like I'd never gotten that from my parents. And my parents are very loving people. I'm happily married. I have kids. You know, I've never still to this day, I've never felt that type of love that I felt on that. I know you might have heard that before, but you know, I just want to let people know that not all aliens are bad. And I don't know if these were interdimensional. I don't know exactly where they were from. They didn't say I'm from the Pleiades. I'm from, you know, Arcturus. They didn't say any of that. They just told me that they're here and that they've been here before us and that they're basically here for us. You know, I see them as more of an angelic type race or whatever they are. I guess they watch over humanity, is what they told me. And then they showed me these ships, like these gigantic ships too, they're in our solar system. Like I could see it was like, I just got the impression that it was on the other side of Saturn. And I've heard that later. And that's why it was weird to me, because they kind of put that impression in my mind. But it was a ship that was about, I don't know, bigger than the moon. And it was like cool because they put me on the ship for a little bit. And they let me see there's these people that look like humans, but they're in, I guess, a fifth dimension. And so there was no war and stuff on there. Like they don't have politics. And it was like, I walked along a bridge that was like, I don't know, like I could not believe it. It reminded me of a gigantic mall. Okay. It looked like a big, big mall, but it was like where people live. And if you look over this like walkway and this bridge, there was this park that was like a forest as far as you could see, but it was in the ship. And it was like birds. I could even see clouds in there, like ecosystem. And like, it was as far as I could see. But from above, it's just a gigantic ship that like is parked there. And there was sunlight coming in and everything. It was cool. It was really odd. Like things like this, I haven't really heard too much, but it was definitely eye-opening. So needless to say, you know, all this, I was shown even more than that. I'm only kind of glossing over it. But what was really weird is obviously I was alone. You know, I could be a crazy person. I could have just like zoned out. I was not high or anything. I was completely sober. But this is the weird part. Okay, so I was laying on the rock, obviously, when this all happened. I woke up on the rock, and about 15 feet away from me was the ranger. He was there with both of our dogs. And he said, dude, what just happened? I said, I didn't say anything. He goes, man, so this is what his story is. And I did see the seagulls fly away when I woke up. This is his story. He said that he saw me laying on the rock. He took the dogs for a walk down there. They saw me. He walked toward me. He said that when he walked toward me, he got a shock through his body that threw him back a couple of feet. He could not approach me. And he said as soon as it pushed him back and he got the big shock and he didn't know it, he was like still grappling with that. He said about 10 seagulls flew down. He doesn't know the exact number. Seagulls flew immediately down and made a circle around me. And he said he kept calling my name and I wouldn't wake up. And then I finally woke up. He said he had been sitting there probably 5 to 10. That's it. But they told me, I think what, you know, and I do have more to this, to be honest with you, that goes later, and it's pretty freaky, actually. But, you know, it does continue. But, yeah, that's pretty much that story, you know. That's my, you know, that could have been in my mind, but I think that correlation at the end was pretty telling.
So, Alex, why do you think they shared all this information with you?
Not sure. I've always been kind of a leader. Most of the time, like when I speak up, like I just find that I know how to direct people. You know what I mean? I'm just kind of like that. And I don't ever, I'm a reluctant leader. Generally, like, I don't like to be the leader, but I'm generally like usually the fastest. I kind of have the best way to get from A to B in the group usually, and I'll do that. So I don't know. I'm kind of I'm kind of a go-getter. I like being social. I love people, you know. I don't know exactly why. I really don't. My dad was a special human too. My dad was kind of angelic. You know, when I think of people in my life, you know, my dad was very much like an angel that was living on the earth, to be honest. He had a temper like anybody else, but he was like such a good person. And he still is. My dad's alive still. But like, I don't know. I really do not know. I know I have O negative blood. I don't know. I've heard that. Or, you know, the O blood. I don't know. I really don't. I don't think there's anything special about me. But I do think it's maybe because of what happened to me the year before. I think they were trying to maybe settle that for me and say, this is who took you and this is what happened. You know, they didn't say that specifically. They didn't even make reference to it. But they did show me like this extremely detailed explanation about Grays. I remember that.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I mean, it's probably good, especially in the first encounter, that you didn't see one of those damn tall, wrinkly dudes that are half robots. I mean, you know, if you see something like that with no reference point, I don't care who you are. You'd be done. You'd never want to. I mean, how do you even rectify that situation mentally with yourself, you know, seeing something like that? So maybe they were just trying to kind of put the band-aid on it that, hey, we know we really scared you that first time, but here's what's really going on. Like, we're cool. We're okay. Except the fact the fact that they need us for reproduction. I mean, you've heard the stories. They're not always light and love and not trying to scare people. It can be quite terrifying. I mean, just look at Travis. I mean, what happened to him in Arizona, in Snowflake, Arizona, and of course, Fire and Sky, a movie, was not entirely accurate, but they're not always very cognizant of our feelings and how we view them.
Told me that, and they actually, and I don't even want to. I know this is another can of worms, but they showed me reptilians too. So that's real too. But yeah, they said that the grays, there, it's more of a black and white agenda to them. Basically, they can't reproduce. They don't even feel. He said they lack emotion, and they want emotions. They want, and they don't have a relationship with the sun either. So they can't be in sunlight.
Hmm.
You know, once you're cut off from the sun, you can't reproduce. You're no longer part of like the group. You know what I mean? Really, they're just existing basically on their intellect. You know, because they have such high technology. But at this point, they're trying to create hybrids. You know, that are part them and part us, so they can survive and they can reproduce and they can, you know, absorb sunlight, basically live. Kind of infill things, you know.
I mean, the fact that your dad also had an experience, and maybe there are others in your family way back, which you probably wouldn't even know that have had experiences. What about, and again, you can just shut me right down, or maybe you don't know. I've never even done the whole 23andMe, so I don't know every minutia of my genealogy. But do you know any background on that? Because there are, of course, besides Rh negative blood and things like that, there is... you know, Native American blood or of German descent, things like this, that sometimes have been rumored to be more attracted to folks as far as this, these anomalies go.
Yeah, totally. So I have an uncle. Well, my, just so you know, my dad's mom. So that's my paternal mother, grandmother. He's 80% Cheyenne Indian, and her brother, I guess, was like 7 foot tall. He was like a bear hunter. I've seen pictures of him with braids and stuff. And I don't think they're full-blooded Native American, but we definitely have Native.
Yeah.
And he was like 6 foot. I think he was like 6 foot nine or 6 foot.
I mean, it's something to know, right? We don't know if it's tied in, but it's something to just take down in the data.
Mm-hmm. I think both me and my dad have the negative blood. The donor blood, the O blood.
Of course, and maybe this is where you were going to go. I don't know, because you said there was some other crazy stuff post this. But my next question is, and again, you can cover whatever you want, but what in the world does all this have to do with demonic activity?
So, well, when I don't know, and I think it's just my attachment to like the other side, you know, because as I've gotten older, like I said, I think I mean, I can tell you about it. It's really quick. But anyway, when I was about 5 or 6, my dad and my mom divorced when I was like 2. So I was really little, and my mom was really young. She wasn't even 21. I think she was 20 when they divorced, and I was born when she was 18. So she was, you know, ready to party. She did not want to really be a mom. She wasn't like abusive or anything like that, but she did do a lot of drugs. She had a lot of boyfriends. She kind of neglected me. I was kind of left alone, and this is in the 70s, so you know, I'm a child of the 70s, so it's kind of normal, I guess. A lot of kids raise themselves. But around like 5 or 6, I started having like something come out of my closet. Okay, it was like a demon, and it was really ugly and scary, and I've actually found mirrors of it like all over the place. In fact, a roommate that I had later on in my late 20s had the same experience growing up. And then have you ever heard of that movie, that show that used to be on, called Paranormal State?
Mm-hmm.
With the school at the college. Well, the guy that ran it, Ryan, I guess, in one episode, he tells a story. He's always like, I had a demonic thing. And he basically had the exact same thing happen to him too. It was even the same creature that he saw. It was like a short little old lady that had like sharp teeth. Really spooky. So I had this happen to me several times when I was little, but 2 years, two years after this abduction experience, I had a really crazy demonic experience with my roommate. And that's my first time ever experiencing something like that physical. It was pretty crazy, if you want me to tell you about that.
Yeah, please do.
So I was living in Hoboken, New Jersey at the time. I had gotten a job. I was working in Manhattan, really, but Hoboken's just like right outside of New York City. So I was living in Hoboken. I'd probably been there about a year, and my own apartment, but it had gotten really expensive. So I had gotten a roommate. It was a friend of a friend, cool dude. And he was like about 7 years younger than me. So he was considerably younger. He was in his early 20s. I was in my late 20s at the time. Basically, we were getting along good for like 6, 7, 8 months. I don't remember how long it was. Everything was perfect. I mean, we were great. And then all of a sudden, I noticed that kind of just started being like not coming home or just like going to his room and staying away all weekend, stuff like that. And what I didn't know is at that time, he was dealing with a cocaine addiction. I didn't know. I didn't know that until much later. So what happened one night? We were out hanging out, watching TV, and I was like, oh, I'm going to bed. And I went to bed at 11. We lived in a two-bedroom apartment. Each room was on either side of the apartment in a long hallway. It's the typical East Coast apartment, you know. I went to bed. I closed my door, and at about like 2, 3 in the morning, probably more closer to 3, I heard like a solid knock at my door. And I basically was like, did I just hear that, or am I just screaming? You know, and I kind of sat there for a second, and it knocked again 3 times, boom, boom, boom. I said, hey, yeah, Ray, what's up? You know, I thought he was going to open the door. And no, he didn't. There was nobody there. I said, Ray, and did not. So I got up. I opened the door. And as I opened the door, I could see a dark figure standing in the hallway dart into the bathroom. And I said, okay, that's Ray. But there was no noise. No light went on. Nobody going to the bathroom. Nothing. It was just dark down the hallway. So I walked down the hallway. And as I walked, like, I don't know why, but I like the hair stood up on the back of my neck for some reason because I started to smell like sulfur smell. And I looked in the bathroom and no one was there. And I had never taken my eyes off the hallway. And then I looked into Ray's room. His door was a little ajar and he was sound asleep in his bed. Sound asleep. So at that point, I was like, okay, this ain't much for me. I walked back to my room. I remember I didn't turn around. I like walked backwards to my room. I closed the door. And I lay down in my bed. And as I like lay there, I was like, I can't believe this. And I started to kind of like, I think 15 minutes might have passed. And I started to doze off a little bit again. And I felt something sit on my bed, like distinctly, like a heavy person. And I did not get up or I didn't even move a muscle. I was like, this did not just happen because my door never opened. And basically I waited there. I was like so scared and like sat up and walked away. And that was pretty much that night. So fast forward to maybe 3 days later, I had a girlfriend who lived in Brooklyn and she was half Puerto Rican and half black. Like her son was studying Yoruba. I don't know if you heard of that.
She had
a 15-year-old son. She had a 15-year-old son who was studying Yoruba.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
It's like an African, it's kind of like, I think what voodoo was based off of,
okay.
You know, like Haitian voodoo, but it's more of an African thing. But he was studying to be a Yoruba priest by a woman that was like in her late 60s. And the weird thing about Wayne, her son, he was a weird person in the sense that he wasn't like he was 15. When you talk to him, you thought he was 75 years old, 100%. He was just so wise. He was just not like a child. He was 15 years old. But I didn't realize how wise he was until this night. So anyways, my girlfriend and I, we got home and we went to her bedroom and she was a single mom and her son, like I said, was 15 years old. And we were in her room eating our dinner, watching TV. And he called her to the living room. He said, hey, mommy, come here. And she went in there and then she came back in the room. She said, hey, Wayne has something he wants to tell you. And I said, what's up? And I went in the room and I said, hey, what's up, man? He said, hey, you got something bad in your house. He goes, I don't know what it is, but I feel it through you. And I said, what? He said, yeah, you've got something really bad in your house. He goes, I don't know what it is. He goes, but you need to do this. And he gave me like a recipe to do. He said, go buy some white rum, a little bottle of white rum. He said, buy a cigar and a white candle. And he goes, go buy that at the bodega at the corner store. And he goes, come home. He said, light the white candle. He goes, put it behind the toilet. He said the toilet. I didn't even mention this to my girlfriend at all. I didn't even mention the episode of what happened. He said, put it behind the toilet. He said, then fill a glass half up with rum and then close that bottle and don't ever open it again. Don't ever use it. He goes, just put it away. Don't ever. Then he said, light the cigar, take a few puffs off of it, and then just put it on top of the glass and let it burn down. And he goes, and don't blow out the candle until it goes down like a votive candle. I did this. It turned out like within about a week or two later, he told me what was going on and he ended up moving back to California, my roommate. And that was that pretty much.
Wow.
That was a pretty freaky experience.
And the figure had darted into the bathroom. That's where you saw it dart in.
Exactly. And then Wayne knew, I didn't even mention it. He just said, put it behind the toilet. I said, okay.
I mean, you do wonder though, if that's even tied to you or the fact that your roommate was just getting darker and darker and being sucked into drugs or whatever else is going on with him. Right.
Yeah, I think it was, something was on him. And, but it, like, you know, that, like, I think these were all awakenings for me to understand the spirit world, because it was like him moving out that pushed me. I became extremely spiritual after this. As I told you, I was like an atheist probably from the age of about 12 on. I remember we went to church for Christmas and for like Easter and stuff like that, but my parents weren't like staunch Christians or anything like that. My dad would say grace sometimes. He wasn't like super into it, and they never really talked to me about God very much. So I'd come to the conclusion that, you know, we're just biological beings. This is just nature. I was very Darwinist type thinking. I'm extremely the opposite now. I'm extremely spiritual. I'm extremely into God. I'm extremely into taking care of my fellow people. Like, I'm really into like living now. And I've been like that ever since, pretty much, I think, after the abduction experience, kind of what set it off. And then this demonic experience, I kind of really pushed me into like studying, like, I don't know, how to like communicate with good spirits, you know? And ever since then, I've kind of had like, not a charmed life by any means, but I've definitely learned how to get on that wavelength more. You know what I mean? And I think it's because I've been able to acknowledge my spiritual self and, you know, our place in the planet, stuff like that. But I owe it all to that second abduction experience, because I asked them, I said, is God real? And they said, of course. And I said, what is God? Like, what? They're like, we don't know. He said, we don't know. We don't know at all. He goes, we just know what we're doing. And he goes, we know that we're moving in that direction. And then I said, well, why do kids have to die? Why are there demons? You know, stuff like, they said, this is all a testing ground. They said, it's a big test. We don't want no chumps up there. We don't want no people that don't know what they're doing. We want to make sure you've got your stuff together before you come up to the other dimensions that are higher up. And it's more of a, I guess, a refining process. They want these souls that get refined and go higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And I said, oh, it's like you. And he said, yeah, he goes, the way I can put it like this, he goes, all the people, even your most highest intellect on the planet, are like kindergartners. We're like seniors. So we haven't graduated yet. You know, that's what the alien on the ship told me. That's the way he put it. He said, we're like seniors and you're like a kindergartner. Yeah. Ever since then, I think took into account the unseen a lot more, and it's made a big difference in my life for sure.
These aliens, because you've heard the accounts of the poor folks that do have straight up what looks like a gray in their home, mm-hmm. the foot of the bed or whatever, yep. and they're floating them through walls and through the ceiling and all this stuff. And then you've heard of people able to, in the name of God, you know, leave me alone. This is my home. And it works. And the grays go away, at least for the time being. So what you're telling me is that aliens actually do give a crap about God, and they in fact believe in God, and that maybe even God created them in some way, shape, or form as well.
Yeah, that's what they told me. Yeah, they said that. And they said that the reason why that does work with them is because they're doing something nefarious. And they're able to do it because they have permission, and because the government controls us, okay? Whether or not we like it or not, that's the way. And the aliens respect that. There is such a thing as a prime directive, like the way the Star Trek is. You know, they can't interfere. They can only interfere in the way like they did with me and take me up and give certain people information to try to disseminate it or to be better people. But they said there's other aliens, too, that are working on a darker agenda, you know, that are not all for our best. And the reason why calling in the name of Jesus does work is because that does have dominion. God does have dominion over all of them. We're all under the same umbrella, he said.
Okay, so the ones that physically took you and were essentially enlightening you, they're not the bad ones. That they admit, though, that there are nefarious ones out there. Just like people, there's good ones, there's bad ones.
So this is going to lead to the next experience, because they never told me so much, and I'm totally against having the hypnotherapy, but I think that's who was in the first hit, were Gray, just because I don't know what happened and it was so clean. That's why I don't think the government's as clean that when they do stuff. I think it was really clean in the sense that I don't remember nothing, and they made us go right to sleep. And then why did I get this huge thing about Grays? Now listen, I'm just going to jump forward to this because it might put things in perspective. So I had my daughter, needless to say, like, let's say this was in late 90s. So about 5 years later, I moved back to Denver. I had to take care of my mother. She had gotten sick, and I had to help her sell her house. So I was out here, and I had left a really great job in New York City. I still ponder it now, but I had to come out here to help my mom. You know, it was a good thing. And I ended up meeting my first wife. I have been divorced. But my first wife, I met her, and we had my daughter. So the weird thing is that the night that my daughter was conceived, I've had my first sleep paralysis ever in my life. I've heard of it. I've never had it. I've actually had a friend of mine that had it in the apartment with me, and he would tell me about it. But I've never had that in my life. I've never felt that. So let me just tell you about it. So it's about like maybe our fourth, fifth date. I don't know, me and my ex-wife. And I think that was when my daughter was conceived. It was a night that we were together. We had went out. We were together, and we were in the bed. We were asleep. It was probably 2 or 3 in the morning. And I woke up, and there were like, I don't know the exact number, but there were multiple grays around the bed. Across the room, I could see a hole in the wall, and through the wall, I could see a shit. Like I could see like panels and like flooring and light and other grays walking around. I was scared out of my mind. My eyes were the only thing I can move. I was like scared hell. And my ex-wife was laying on my chest, kind of like on her side, kind of on my chest on the left side, asleep. And the grays, I could tell they recognized that I was awake. I basically mustered up every ounce of energy I could into my pinky, and I rubbed my ex's shoulder with my pinky, and she started to like move and like rouse, like she was going to wake up, and they immediately disappeared, and everything disappeared in my room. I did not go from a sleeping to a waking state. I was wide awake, completely wide awake. It was just like, next thing you know, she was just like, hey, and then she just kind of rolled over and went to sleep again. And then we were in the dark room again. Fast forward to about 14 months later, my daughter was born. And this is something that I still talk with my ex about, and then I'll leave it at this and you can ask me questions, but I do not get this still to this day. My daughter was 2 months old at this time. It was in April in Colorado. We drove down to the sand dunes. We left on a Friday and we came back on a Sunday. I don't remember it at all. And I'm like, why would we go to the sand dunes and camp in April with our 2-month-old? I don't remember that time. I don't even know what happened. Like I asked her, I'm like, do you know any details of where we went? I remember setting up the tent. I remember leaving. I remember the drive, but I don't remember nothing about it. And the sand dunes are right near the San Luis Valley. They're in the San Luis Valley. And I've heard a lot of stories about grays and stuff over down there. That whole time to me is just like thinking about it now. I'm at a loss. I don't know. Cause I'm so big about remembering things. I mean, I remember a lot of stuff, very detailed. You know, I can even say, oh yeah, I remember it was, you know, even though you gloss over and you kind of only have there was no memory, none, neither of us. And I talked to her, we talked about it several times. My daughter, the daughter that we took down there that was 2 months old, she's 18 now. So that'll give you an idea of how long ago that was.
And you know for a fact, both of you agree, like you went there. It's just you remember setting up, but you don't remember the time there nor leaving.
Nope. Mm. Both of us are the exact same. Neither of us. And we've both remarked on it because she's kind of into this stuff, my ex. And I'm like, she's like, that was so weird. She goes, why would we even go there and camp in April? Like it's cold still, you know? And we had a 2-month-old. Who would take their 2-month-old? And it's not even close. It's like a 4-hour drive from Denver. Mm. You know, it's not like if we were going to just camp, why wouldn't we just go somewhere right nearby? There's so much stuff around Denver.
Yeah, there sure is.
It, it was just like, I don't know, going back, like, I don't, like, something brought us there, something took us there. I don't know what was going on, but we had a 2-month-old baby and we went camping for a weekend and I don't remember anything about it.
Well, you say that your daughter is 18 now. Do you think, or do you know if she's had any experiences herself?
She's had a lot of her own type of like experiences, but she's gone back and forth between me and her mom, and she's had a little bit of a contentious relationship with her mother. So, you know, I don't know if it's regular teenage stuff, but she has had a lot of like supernatural things happen to her by herself, which I told her, you know, that happened to me when I was little. I mean, it kind of went away after I was like a child though, but she's had stuff go on, I think, her whole life, to be honest. I don't think it's super bad or anything, but I know she's had it.
Is it mostly what we would classify as classic ghostly activity, or what kind of activity?
I think ghostly. I think ghostly, spiritual type activity. Yeah. She has, and she also is a very, very psychic person. In fact, we used to have a trick where when she was little, it kind of ended when she was about 6 or 7 or 8 maybe. When we'd lose anything, we would just ask her. She would know where it is. She'd be like, think about it. She'd sit and think. And she goes, have you looked behind your bed on the other side? Go there and there's my keys. You know what I mean? She did it several times. Kind of lost the ability, but she would do that when she was little. Totally.
I mean, Alex, what are your thoughts on all of this being tied into consciousness? You know, and obviously they're attracted to you for whatever reason, and some of your family, obviously. Do you feel like you could, you know, go outside and maybe execute, oh my gosh, it just fell out of my head. What is the CE5? Execute a CE5 or something like that, and have and essentially call them in and say, okay, I'm ready to take a trip again and give me more information. Do you think that you could maybe ask for that and have that happen, or have you had enough?
No, I know what is, see, and then that's kind of what led into my experience after my roommate left, the demon experiences. I actually started to study Zazen sitting. I didn't become a Buddhist, but Zazen sitting is like where you just sit in the lotus position for like 20 minutes at a time. And you just kind of focus on like a spot in the air, kind of meditate. Well, I did that for a long time. I did it for 2 years straight. I did it like religiously all the time before I moved back to Denver. And I'll tell you this, during that, I had some extreme consciousness things where I encountered a lot of stuff, a lot of beings and stuff. So it is all about consciousness. And I think that is what they were trying to show me. And they took me like, you know, astral, like they took my body, you know, without my body. But yeah, I do think it is, it's all about consciousness and kind of like where you're at. And I think ever since I was young, I've always been kind of outside the crowd thinking. And I think that's why I was always kind of like a leader, because I'm kind of fearless. I don't really have a lot of fear of things. I generally am kind of like, I like to jump feet first and just like learn, you know, things. So I don't know, maybe it was my adventurous spirit. I don't know. I am very imaginative, but like I said, I think also because I was godless, and I know I'm not trying to turn this all religious or anything and try to preach. I'm not doing that. But I do think I was kind of in a place where I didn't have a lot of faith and meaning in my life, you know? And after that, I started to really become really close to, I guess, like I said, the unseen, you know, what's around us all the time. And it is very conscious based thing. But man, the information about the grays really kind of floored me, because I didn't really ponder aliens, you know, like I never thought that was real. Obviously, it seemed outside of the box for me back then.
Well, did they tell you why they choose certain people to go into their homes or choose them for their reproductive purposes? What's the pointing situation? Like, why you, why them, why him, why her?
They did tell me that. And they said that particularly with the grays, well, with them, it's kind of willy-nilly. I think they're just looking for people that are ready and willing and able to accept the information. But with the grays, I guess they do follow family lines. That is one thing they told me, that they focus on certain, because it's easier to do that. They can stick with those genetics. And they do look for certain markers. You know, they'll sometimes pick up people. They don't like to start new and just grab somebody, because, you know, there's so much genetic pool out there. So they do stick with certain lines because they're easier. They're more receptive to their genetics, you know, to be able to blend them. and hybridize with their genetics, because not everyone works right, you know. One thing they did show me was hybrids too, and they were crazy looking. They showed me, like, when you're being taught on this spaceship, it's not like it's like it's all being played in your head, like video that's clearer than the clearest TV, the clearest camera, you know. It's like crazy how clear it is. But they were showing me these hybrids that were like with sparse hair and like big eyes that looked human, but they were like really big. And they were like, these are the ones are basically on Earth, or some of them on Earth right now. You know, they're hiding. They're trying to live amongst us to just learn how to be human, I guess. But yeah, they did show that to me. And they said that they do focus on certain genetic markers and family lines for sure. So they're more dominant with those genes, I guess.
Do you still try to do any of your sittings or contact them in any way?
I don't sit anymore, but you know what? I've kind of come to a place, and I should probably. It's just I've gotten so busy. I'm on my third kid right now. I have a third grader. I think, I learned enough that I don't feel like I could ever fall down. Like I try to help every person that I come across that I feel is like depressed or lost in life. I mean, I'm not like a preacher or anything like that, but they told me that's all you can do is just be an assistant. That's what you're here for. Because they said that all of us come from different places, and all of us have been here before. All of us have been in other galaxies. Like, I don't know if you believe in any of this, I'm just going to tell you what they told me. They told me that reincarnation is very real. A lot of us choose to come here that have been already evolved and already have moved on. But we come down here to help people. And they said that I was one of those people. They said, you are one that had already gone through this. And you're here to help people. And that's why I think I've never really had to deal in my life with like depression. I've never really been confused. Even when I was an atheist, I was never like confused. Like, I never felt like I don't belong here. You know, like this is horrible or anything like that. I've always had like a oddly upbeat mentality, I guess.
Now, what about did they talk about the hybrids that are living amongst us? What's their purpose? Do they get taken back and forth from ships, and are they just kind of more studied? Like, what are they doing on Earth? And are they just trying to reproduce with full on humans? But then it seems like it would just dilute things even more, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, exactly. And so, no, they're not trying to do that. I think what they're trying to do is maybe get them just acclimated, because they think something's going to happen to us. There's going to be some kind of catastrophe or something, and they're going to try to, like, I don't know what they showed me. I mean, obviously, one of the things that was showed to me was, like, cataclysm. And I don't like to say that, because I don't think it has to happen like that. But they did show me a possibility, I guess, a scenario. And I've heard this, you know, obviously you've done this so much, you probably heard it all the time too. They do show you like cataclysm on Earth and the preparation for that. And I think a big part of the hybrid program is to kind of salvage our genetics too. You know what I mean? So that we're not lost. So maybe this new race or this new species is kind of like something they're going to further us on. They did show me that they have colonies set up in other parts of the solar system too, that are sometimes underground, that they keep things like, I guess, in Mars. See?
With hybrids or humans or both?
Humans and hybrids, yeah. Mm. Yeah, they have these colonies that are like under Mars is what they showed me. And then, like I said, there was these big spaceships too. But I think those were a different dimensional type of thing. But I really want to stress the whole gray thing, because that through I think that's what was in the first really do. I don't want to do any kind of hypnotherapy, but it just, after what happened with my daughter and what I saw that night, I have never experienced sleep paralysis and any of this or any of time in my life. Even when I had my demonic experiences as a child, I was able to move. I would throw my blankets over my head, so I wasn't frozen. But yeah, I think it's an agenda for sure. I think something might happen to us.
I mean, the cataclysm, if I could say that word, cataclysm thing isn't so far off. I mean, I feel like the Earth itself is probably trying to buck us off of its back as hard as it can, because we're pretty destructive. So I don't think that's too far off as far as something that could happen.
Right. Yeah, that's what they told me. They said, be warned, you know, that what we're doing, and that I think a big part of what they take, because I've heard a lot of the same methods that I've had, you know, like nuance, the details aren't the same, but a lot of the message that a lot of abductees come back with, and I'm not saying all the ones that are evil. Oh, and you know what they told me? They did tell me that that's ending, that there was some kind of treaty that ended. So they're like, you're not going to really see the grave abduction stuff. I don't know if you've heard any of that very recently, like anybody having that within the last 5 to 10 years, but they told me that stuff was supposed to be ending. They were done with it, I guess. Mm. They got enough.
Really? Yeah, I wonder what that means, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But I remember they said this is going to, and I'm like putting it, you know, I'm like adding up the years in my mind, and I'm like, okay, so they said this was ending. They're like, they only had a certain amount of time to do this hybrid program, and I guess it was from X amount, you know, probably the 70s up through maybe even the 60s. I don't know, but maybe in Barney Hill, whenever that
right.
So I think that. Yeah. But like, if you notice, like, I don't know, you do this a lot more than me, but I've started to hear that a lot of the abduction stories are a lot different now. They're not the gray stories anymore. It's hard to find a gray story where people are being probed and probed like from within the last 5 years.
Right. I mean, we change our tactics for things all the time. You look at the way that the military does things, and maybe their rules and laws catch up with them. If they live at all like we do, you said that they're not political, but who knows, maybe just advances in their technology changes the way that they interact with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They did give us technology. That is something that you've heard probably in the literature. And that was told to me too. They were like, it was an exchange, and our government, they're like, when your government, it's kind of like we have free will and all that, but when we have governments, we're giving up like our free will to the government, and the government can kind of make decisions for us, and they follow those rules, you know, in space, like the galactic whatever. You probably heard people talk about the galactic council and all this stuff, so I think that's what I was talking to be honest. It seemed like they were above all of this, you know what I mean? Like, they almost seemed like, did you ever watch Star Trek?
I'm more of a Star Wars fan, but I've definitely watched Star Trek.
Okay, Star Trek, it had this character in it back. It was in the Next Generation, the one with not the Spock, Kirk, but the one that came after with Picard in them. But anyway, it was a character. It was an alien. His name was Q. And he would like take this countenance of a human with like red clothes on. But he was part of a race that they were above. They're like, they can do whatever. They can just appear anywhere. They can do whatever. And I almost got the feeling that the race or the aliens that I was talking to were like, they were kind of like above. They're not in a part of any of that stuff. They're more of a, and he did explain that. He said, we were here before humans were on the planet. We were watching this planet. We were here. We've been around all that time. They were kind of a different, I think, echelon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're far above us in so many ways. It's ridiculous. And I think it's pretty cool that you would be chosen to have such interactions, right? So, well, Alex, thank you so mm-hmm. much for coming on and sharing your very unique experiences with me.
Oh, so happy to do it. Thank you so much, Shannon. Appreciate it.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little biography. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real you, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the real you. See how they play with this exam by the koans to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. example, are quite divided on this. They will say, no, we don't believe literally in reincarnation. That after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you'll be reincarnated. If you are liberated, you will understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it in this way. He said, spring does not become summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.